We'd like another 5 minutes, guys. So today we have a panel. So I'm going to invite the panelists to come up, and as they do, could you be praying for them? No. So Justin, if you'd like to come up, Ben and Nicole, Denise and Nikki and Jace. Okay, Ben and Nicole here, and Denise, just grab a seat, friends. Give them all a clap. So we've got two mics that are on, and for those who are visiting us last Sunday, once a year, we give something around money. We don't make it a feature here. We are a generous-hearted church, but once a year we just feel to do this. So last week I spoke on tithing, and this week we've got all manner of questions for our panelists. I just want to first of all start off with a passage in Luke 18. Last week we did Luke 19. Luke 18 talks about the rich young ruler. And this rich young ruler asked Jesus, "Good teacher, what must I do to inherit the life of the age to come?" "Why call me good?" said Jesus to him. "No one is good except God alone. You know the commandments. Don't commit adultery, don't kill, don't steal, don't swear falsely, honor your father and mother. I've kept all of them," he said, "since I was a boy." And when Jesus heard that, he said to him, "There's just one thing you're short of. Sell everything you own and distribute it to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven. Then come follow me." Now, does Jesus say the same thing to you and I? Sell everything you have and give to the poor. I have a Hilux Surf. What do you do with that passage? What do you personally do with it? If you really like the person next to you, talk to them. If you don't, look at the ceiling. Go to it. Okay, here we go. I mean, personally, I think with that passage, Jesus is signaling that when we get to know him, our attachment to all things related to money needs to change. Arguably for this guy, this was his area of obsessive attachment. But we do read in the Gospels, actually, that Matthew kept his house and Peter kept his boats. Did you get the point? And people like me keep the Hilux. But in terms of money, there needs to be a different relationship, that second reconciliation that I talked about last week. The first reconciliation is to Jesus, but the second conversion is in terms of our pockets. And so that's what we're continuing to explore. Just by a teaser, could we have the next... Oh, no, I've got my own clicker. So don't you do it, Matthew. Now, last week I said that, you know, a lot of people don't like pastors talking about money because they tend to have this impression these days that's all that pastors talk about. We only do it once a year. But I did come across this photo. Can you see the difference between the two? What's the difference between, by the way, the guy in the, he's a patriarch in the Eastern Orthodox Church. He's like a bishop, a pastor. There's one minor difference between the two photos. One has a... That's it. No, one has a watch. The watch, can you see it on the left hand? In the left photo. Someone, a journalist, did some research on that watch. That watch... To buy that watch costs $39,000. So this particular pastor came in for criticism from the world media. And so what they tried to do is to wash out the watch in the second photo on the right. Do you see what I'm getting at? In other words, disguise the fact that a pastor would own a $39,000 watch. Do you personally think it's appropriate for... You can see where this is heading. will be taking up an offering soon. I have no watch, you see, so... But do you personally think it's appropriate for a Christian or for a pastor to own such an expensive piece of, well, an expensive accessory? Tell the person next to you. We all right there? Yeah, okay. Just a vote on this? Is this permissible? What do you think? For those who would say, yep, it's okay for a Christian, for a pastor to have such an accessory. If you have no problems with it, show of hands. If you're against it, show of hands. Okay, thank you. So this is just a teaser into our panel, therefore. Guys, last week I talked about tithing. And that basically we talked about putting aside 10% of your income and giving it to your local church. Would you agree with this? Just very quick answers down the line, starting with Jason.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah, pretty much.
Maybe. Yes.
Yes.
Maybe. Denise, what's your hesitation?
I think about the scripture in Mark about the widow who was in poverty.
Yeah.
And two coins was huge for her. So yes. 10% of, you know, it just, yes. I can't put a figure on it. Yeah. Giving is correct, but how much is a bit of an issue for me.
Okay, thank you for that. Jason, you said yes, why?
Basically something I've been taught. You know, growing up and haven't always done it. But it's been, I guess, a wisdom passed on and text that I've read. So sort of, you know, do it.
Yeah. Are you doing it now? Don't need to answer that. okay. And last week, guys, I put this up as a simple plan for the year, for our income. The first tenth is a tithe. The second tenth, savings and emergencies, and the remaining 80% life and living. So Justin Lee, what do you think about that as a basic plan?
It's complete rubbish. I think it's a good general guideline.
Yeah.
But I think the reality is when you get a lot of people together in a room, lots of people's financial situations are quite a bit different.
Yeah.
They might get their incomes from different sources in different ways. So I think it's a good guideline that probably works for maybe, you know, most people. But some people might have to do things a little bit differently. And they might have to juggle it around a bit depending on their phases of life and what they're trying to do and that sort of thing. But largely, I think it's pretty good.
Okay. How many in the panel here would be saving for their future and their retirement?
The traditional form?
Yeah, whatever form, but you're saving for retirement. See, a question that came up during the week is this. Someone said, there is a view out there that we shouldn't have to save for our future because God will care for us. Now, I often hear that. What is your view on that? You know, we shouldn't have to save for our future. Because when that future arrives, God will care for us. So how do you respond to that? So anybody on the panel? Anybody? Ben?
I think it kind of comes to the context of how you're living your life at the moment. If you're saying, God will look after me when I'm old, so I'll spend all my money now on things I don't need, then that's ridiculous. But if you're living within your means only and can't afford to, or giving away the rest, then there may be some merit to it.
Okay, thanks, Ben. Keep it going and speak to the crowd. You don't have to speak to me. But what do you think of that line, we don't have to put aside for the future because God will care for us?
I think it's like the seatbelt argument. You know, I don't need to wear a seatbelt because I'm a Christian and God's going to look after me. It's not really like that. I think ultimately God will always look after you, and it's, I think, you know, I think ultimately it will turn out just fine. But I think, you know, you've got to have some prudence as well. You've got to look after your future financial situation. And it's a good guard, like what Ben's saying about the context. You know, you can't use it as an excuse that God's going to look after me, that I'm not going to save, I'm just going to fritter everything away, and I'll take each day as it comes. I think a bit of prudence is wise.
Any other view, guys, on the panel? Nikki?
I think it's interesting that it's seen as in the future God will look after us. What makes it different from the present?
Yeah.
Like, if you're claiming a promise from God, how is the context different from now?
Yeah.
So therefore, we shouldn't have to work or do anything because God's looking after us.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, thank you, Nikki. Yeah. Denise?
I think God gives us a brain.
Yes.
And we're pretty fortunate in New Zealand that often we're quite resourced. I think about people in the rest of the world who you could say that same thing and doesn't look like God's looking after them too well, actually. Yeah. They're starving. I think he calls us to be a bit clever with how we use our money and use it wisely. Yep.
Yeah, very good. Okay. Another question that has come up in this last week goes like this. So we as a church, we encourage people to give a tithe. We do, actually. But we as a church also encourage people to give money, for example, to missionaries who work overseas. Should the money that has been given to missionaries overseas be over and above the tithe or be included within the tithe? Do you get the question? Do you get the question? Could you now discuss that with the person next to you? Go to it. So let's open this to the panel. Should giving to missionaries be over and above the tithe or included within the tithe? Do you like the question? So Ben, you're a sharpshooter. You go for it.
Yeah, I'm Salvation Army, born and bred, so a bit traditional. That's where mine comes from, and I essentially believe that God gives us 100% and lets us have 90% to do what we want with, using it wisely. So 10 is gone, and that's running your church that you go to, and it's the church's business what they do with that money. For you to then be giving, it's over the 10%. Otherwise, you're not actually giving, you're keeping more of the 90%.
So, Nicole, you're married to this incredibly gorgeous creature. bromance here. But Nicole, is that your view as well, that that giving to missionaries or giving to World Vision, giving to Tear Fund, giving to the Nepalese earthquake, giving to the flood in Vanuatu is over and above the tithe?
Yeah, I have the basis of that as well. I wasn't born and bred Salvation Army, but I got to a point in my teenage years through one of my bosses actually, like 10% you should be giving. And I believe that. And, yeah, then over and above is what you want to give to any other thing. But I don't think, I don't feel like people need to get caught up in giving to every single thing.
No.
I think some people do, I've got to give to that and that and that, and it gets a bit too much.
Yeah.
I think it's up to you, between you and God, with your money, how much you can give and want to give over and above the tithe.
Can I ask you when was the last time that you did give over and above, and what was it to?
Probably we sponsor children and they have birthdays that we try and give them.
Wow. How many kids do you sponsor?
Three.
How many would sponsor a child here? How many? That is incredible. Yeah, okay. Any other view on this question? Go for it, Nikki.
We talked about this last night, prepping, you know.
Yeah.
And I kind of see it as, I said to Jason, I relate it back to the scripture, I'm not going to quote where it was because I can't, Jesus told us to go out into the world and preach the good news, but he started with local and then regional and then national and then international, and so that's kind of, I guess, how I see it as well, is that you first give to the local so that locally, you know, amongst your community, you're giving, and that's how the church, you know, interacts with that, and then above and beyond whatever international, national, whatever it ends up being that you want to support, that comes as a secondary, because it's first your community and then out from there.
Great, thank you for that. Any other perspective on this one? Justin and then Denise. Yeah.
Mine's quite
thank
majorly.
You, Justin. That'd be great. No, Denise. Sorry. Okay. Just got the names mixed up. Yeah, I know. That's all right. Denise, go for it.
Mine's quite a lot different. So my perspective is I struggle with percentages. I think about if we had a millionaire and he gave 10%, that's $100,000. If we have someone on $50,000 a year, they give 10%, that's $5,000. There's quite a huge, so therefore the millionaire has $900,000 or $800,000 to live on. So therefore, I struggle to put a figure, like a percentage figure, because our incomes are all different. I think the question is, what is it that we need to live on? And there's needs and wants, and how do you determine how much money you need to spend on food, for example, compared to someone else? I think we need to do a lot of research on that, and Otago University does that with food, for example. They have an annual, they kind of work out annually how much does an adult or a child or whatever need to sustain themselves, so in a healthy way. So I think that's the kind of question I would ask, is, you know, those sort of things first. Yeah.
Okay, thanks. And Justin?
Yeah, I actually agree with Denise, and I'd take it one step further. So I don't think that it's that you can just say, okay, there's a tithing rule, 10% of your gross income, where you go, and stick to that, and then move on to, you know, adding additional giving to something else. I don't think that first rule is there because of a plethora of different economic situations around the world. So Denise is saying people have different income levels. I'm saying people have different income levels and tax regimes. So if you go back to, say, ancient Rome and biblical times, you've got the tax rate in Rome was 5%. So you live in Rome, you pay your 5% to Caesar, and then you pay your 10% to your church, you've got 85%. If you live in a country like maybe Norway or Sweden, and I'm kind of guessing here a little bit, their tax rates for certain income brackets are, you know, getting up past 50, 60%. So you have someone earning, you know, $100,000, losing 60, then paying another 10,000 to the church, and they've suddenly had a poverty line. So I think that particular issue, you know, you can talk about what is or isn't income. So, you know, if I get some salary and wages from my job, is that income? If I get a tax credit for working for families, is that income? Do I tithe on that? I've just sold my car, I got a little bit more than I paid, but I put a whole lot of work into it. So we can have a whole semester of lectures on that one little issue, and I think it's so complex that so that basic rule isn't there. So then to talk about, do you need to give something on top of your 10%? Well, yeah, that doesn't kind of work. But I agree with Denise in that you need to assess what your level of giving is, and then I agree with Nikki in that your first port of call should be your church and your local establishment, and then you should probably go further than that.
So let me ask another question. Say that a person, their life is going to custard, they've lost their job, or they're having to go down to a part-time job, they're also sponsoring a child, but something has to give. You can't do it all in light of changed circumstances. What should be the first to go, the sponsoring of the child or the local church tithe? But isn't this a real issue? Isn't this a real issue? Yeah. So any views on that one? And you're making hard choices here. Go to it. Ben?
I think obviously there's so many situational things to do with it, and how long is that going to be, and how well supported you are in the network that you're in. So how long is this actually going to matter? And from a basic point of view, say from our point of view, if that was to happen, I imagine it's not going to be a terribly long period. So if we really couldn't afford it, it's just harder to stop supporting a child and then start again, and you'll lose that relationship, which I think is actually quite a big part of the sponsorship. You'll lose your child, which hopefully you've been communicating with. So keep the child and drop the ties until you can pay it back. But if that was us, and in what I would term would most likely be a relatively short period before we were able to pay again.
So you're saying keep the child, drop the tithe. Nicole?
And I'm the opposite.
Yeah.
I think we'd talk about it and we'd discuss the situation and stuff, but I think I would lean more towards pausing the child. I wouldn't.
Can you do that?
You can do that. I don't. They don't like it for a long period of time, but you can if you're in a very hard time, and you could say for a month or two or whatever, you can pause your payment for a couple of months and continue writing and everything and usually the organisation will cover it for that time. But I'd probably keep the church ties.
Okay.
And start the family.
Yeah. Any other view on this one down the line?
I was in a situation where my child had moved out of a... I'd been sponsoring.
yeah, I was wondering. Yeah, anyway.
Sorry, just clarification. moved out of the Tier Fund area, so was no longer being supported and part of it, and they were just going to sign me up to another kid. At the time, I was studying and had incredibly limited income, and it felt really conflicted about basically saying, oh, look, please don't sign me up at this stage because I actually can't, you know, like, can't, sort of felt like I was getting out of jail free card. But that for me at that time, I also had debt and I had to kind of do the, do I feel guilty about the fact that at this stage I need to say, no, I'm not going to sign up for another child and commit to this other kid for however many years, and that I can choose to do that at a point where I am actually financially not unstable. Yeah, but I felt it was a, you know, I had to talk through it with somebody because I was feeling conflicted that, you know, was this the right thing to do, or was I being greedy and selfish and or just wanting to pay my rent, you know.
Okay.
So,
very good. Justin, if someone comes and says, look, I already pay my taxes, that must be a form of giving. I therefore don't need to do any other types of giving.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. You know, a lot of the you look at where taxes go, and it's, you know, things like education, health, welfare, those sorts of things. And I think there, you know, the church does another kind of work, and that's you know, spreading God's word. And I think that needs some funding from somewhere. So I think, you know, you look at where the church, what the church came out of, and what it's become and what it's doing, and if you want to be part of it, you can help it by funding it as well, and I think we're called to do that. So we need to do more than just pay our taxes.
Okay. I've lined these guys up with specific questions, so I'm now going to go through those, starting with Jason over here as he shuffles in his seat. So Jason, the brief was for you. Have you made some big money mistakes? I don't know why I picked you on this one, but have you made some big money mistakes over the last couple, you know, last decade or so, you know, like, and what are they and what are you seeking to do about them?
Yeah, I've lost to fingers and toes to count how many mistakes, but two come to mind, and have been when I've basically lived beyond my means and gone and drawn up some significant credit card debt. So the first time for that was when I started working overseas, when I was with Fisher & Paykel, went to Thailand. I was there for some time and basically lived a lifestyle where my nickname when I was over there was the Mayor of Thailand. So I lived like the Mayor of Thailand. And, you know, whether it was going out, having some good parties, or just hiring a boat and going out for the day, because you can, why not? And at the time, I was earning good money for my age. I was still actually an apprentice. And so there was all this wealth in front of me, and in a relatively cheaper country to access these resources. And so kind of my decision or thought process, rightly or wrongly at the time, was like, you know, why not? And being an impressionable lad that I was at the time, you know, trying to impress others was a big thing. So if I could, you know, rock on up with a boat and say, come on boys, we're going out for a day, got a few brownie points. And that took me a significant time to finally write off. And partly that was actually when I left Fisher & Paykel, getting a bit of a payout and so forth, was able to zero that debt. But rather than learning from that mistake, I jumped straight back into it, where I racked up my my second massive credit card debt of over 20 grand. And I was always earning well. I was never having to worry about paying bills, but I had to manage, I guess, a credit card balance, and was living a lifestyle that just wasn't right. And basically part of the reason why I actually moved to Christchurch a couple of years ago was to take up a role where I was going to be earning into another price bracket for myself, which would have enabled me, the bit of the plan that I'd put in place was to, within that year, get debt free. And I got that goal, which was awesome, but it was also a hard time because personally I had to leave here, had to have some hard conversations with some mates, and yeah, but I got to manage to pay that debt off, and certainly I'm on the thought now, as I'm in a marriage now, of not, you know, it's not just my mouth that I'm feeding. I've got a wife and I've got a bump on the way, so I need to prioritise how I want to live moving forward, and obviously being a good steward of my money as I've sort of wised up, matured, gotten a little bit older, realised that, you know, you can't just live like the mayor of Thailand all the time. So there you go.
Really appreciate the honesty. Hey, I mean, that's awesome that you can have spaces like this where it's safe and you can be honest. So thanks, Jason, yeah. Justin, my friend, I mean, a lot of us here have worked with you in and around money issues because you've got that kind of brain and we really respect you on money issues. And you do have a good reputation as someone who's a stickler for integrity and honesty around money. So the question is, what are some of the mistakes that we Christians fall into where we just kind of conveniently blur the line in and around money?
Yeah, I think it's an issue not just Christians. I think it's an issue that affects everybody. And I think people make poor money decisions when there's some sort of benefit or some sort of detriment for them on the line. So in my line of work, I see it where people are maybe taking a tax position on something. So maybe they've got an idea about whether they should be not claiming some depreciation back on some rental property or not paying it back, or, you know, these kind of things. So, you know, New Zealand has an honesty-based tax system. You can put whatever you want on a tax return, pretty much, and unless you get audited, you're going to get away with it. And I see that I think a lot of people make really bad calls. They don't want to go down the equity and fairness route when it's their own money on the line. And I think, yeah, lots of people make that mistake. And that's Christians and non-Christians.
What about a church? What kind of mistakes can a church make?
Churches are the worst. No, if funny story. Churches have a very trusted tax position in New Zealand. And, you know, this anecdote here, sorry, it's got a bit of numbers in it. But what you need to understand is that when we go and get a job and we earn, for example, $133, okay, we pay tax on the $133 and we're left with $100. Then we give that to our church. We get $33 back because of that tax we've paid. The $100 gets spent by the church, and any GST that they pay, they get that back as well. So that normally wouldn't happen for an entity that didn't have an income to match it. That some tax was going to be paid to the government on. So the church has a very privileged tax position in New Zealand on that basis. Okay, but I think you know, over my years, and particularly when I was treasurer here, I saw a few issues where, you know, the church accepted that position, and then there were other issues as well where there are opportunities where there's sort of grey and blurred lines to get even, you know, more, a little bit more tax efficiencies out of certain things, you know, ways to pay pastors, and you know, just we don't need to get into the specifics of it. And I think the church, and not this one in particular, you know, really sort of pushed the boat a bit too far. And I think they didn't really see fairness and equity in it. And I think it's a big risky thing to do, particularly in light of the favourable position that the church has already got in the first place.
Yeah.
But again, it comes down to that fact. And I think, you know, we were talking a little bit about it at Cell Group the other day, that evilness is all about, you know, self-centeredness. Well, not all about it, but often comes about through self-centeredness. And it's when you are making a decision based upon a benefit or a detriment to yourself, and it's, you know, your money on the line, often we get it wrong and we don't see that equity and fairness that we need to. It's usually pretty good to stand back and get a third-party perspective on it to help us make the decision and really grow some courage to bite the bullet and say, okay, this is going to cost me a bit, I'm not going to like it, but actually it's the right thing to do.
Mm. Thanks, Justin. Okay, so we're going to jump over to Nicole. Now, Nicole, you said before that you and Ben, you know, disagree. You know, like Ben was saying that, you know, in a tight time, you know, he would go this route, but you said, no, you disagreed. So when it comes to how do couples make decisions in and around giving, especially when the couples disagree? I mean, what have you learned on that one?
We don't actually disagree too much. We do discuss it quite a lot. Ben probably has more of a stronger opinion on money and everything. Pretty much everything. And I just let it all hit us happen. Yeah. No, I do have strong opinions, but probably not as strong as he does. Or, I don't know, I trust his judgment and his discernment. So I think that helps with our discussions and our decisions.
Does he trust yours?
Yeah, he genuinely wants to know what I think, which is
so when it comes nice. To push, when push comes to shove, and you're both adamant, you're both disagreeing, still, even after discussion and prayer, still disagreement, how do you resolve it when it comes to giving? Oh, you haven't been there?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
We haven't got to that.
You haven't got,
haven't
to,
got
that.
To that point yet.
Anyone else got to that out there? You've got to genuine disagreement still after much discussion as a married couple when it comes to giving. Show of hands? Oh, that's a dead question. any advice on what? How do couples make decisions around giving?
One thing we kind of talk, what we always come back to in the end, or often I might take it back to, is for us to give this, what are we missing out on? And often because of the position we're in and whatever, it's we're missing out on a complete luxury, and the chances are we could probably do that luxury anyway because we'll be able to find the money somewhere. So when it comes to the, you know, that's the position we're in, it's not everyone's. And so we basically, when it comes down to that, it's like, well, you have to give it.
So you are on the side of giving, you would say, well, we have to give it. Give.
Yeah, because we're not, we very, very rarely have been in a place in our lives where we've had to give and it actually really hurt.
Okay, yeah.
So my position on that, if it's not really hurting you, then when you get down to the bottom of it, you've got to give it, otherwise
someone
in real need is missing out
for
you to spend an extra $500 on some clothes, which you do not need. So when you really get down, and that's some of our discussions we've gotten to that level, and we're both like, well, yeah, can't keep it.
So, Nicole, can you remember a time when you gave and it did hurt? You gulped.
I can't really remember. And there was a point where Ben was studying. Yeah, it was quite early on in our marriage, maybe second year or something. Ben was still studying, and I was working in a job I really, really, really didn't like. So I just quit and didn't really have anything to do for 3 weeks. And we were still giving then, weren't we?
It ended up being 3 weeks where we had no idea. It was gonna be.
3 weeks of no work.
Yeah.
I don't have a strong attachment with money, and I do have a very strong, like, everything will be okay kind of a...
Yeah.
I trust that things will work out. So that was a hard time, but Ben probably stresses about that kind of thing more than I do.
Okay, so no, that's cool. That's cool. I just we've got to wrap this up soon. Now, Denise, you intentionally have gone to live in Randwick Park. You work amongst vulnerable people. And there is this move, you know, John Campbell, TV3, he was driving it for a while of, you know, providing breakfasts for families in poorer areas. What's your particular view on that?
Tricky. None of my answers are straightforward, I think. I think at the end of the day, I think about the family and I think about the family unit, and children need to know that parents can provide, and they want, and the, and I think as Christians too, we want to encourage strong families. And how do you do that? When food is provided, like through a breakfast club, who are the heroes to the children? Is it their parents that are providing them breakfast? Or is it the school or lovely, caring people? I think it would be great to see a more creative way of helping people provide breakfast for their children, where the parents look like the heroes, and not the church, and not the lovely teachers at school or whatever, but that somehow it looks like to the kids that the parents are providing breakfast. I talked to a mum a few years ago, when, because we have breakfast club in our community, and there are children that are hungry. That is so true. But one mum was struggling with her children because the breakfast club was providing nicer breakfast than she could provide. So they wanted to go to school to have breakfast rather than have breakfast at home. I don't think that's a great thing. I think somehow if families are struggling to provide food on the table, how can we get that food into the home so that the parents look like they're the providers?
Great, great response, yeah. So just to wrap this up, has anybody else got one final thing you're just dying to say?
Hello. I think one thing I'd like to say to wrap up is, you know, when I work for businesses and we look after their money and that sort of stuff, we very rarely actually talk about money. And if you find yourself having an argument about money, you're probably not actually arguing about money. Mm. It's normally something below it. Mm. You need to remember that money is just an instrument that assigns value. And then if you're trying to resolve a money issue, think about that value beneath it. So, you know, rather than thinking about overspending on something, what you're really doing is you're indulging in some sort of aspect of your life that maybe you probably shouldn't be, or you're not thinking enough about your future, those sorts of things. I think that's something that's probably worth remembering.
Thanks, great comment. Yeah.
I suppose my challenge is, if you haven't already read the book Rich Christians in an Age of Hunger, I read it 30 years ago, and it totally transformed the way that I perceived myself and how I was supposed to use money in relation to God. So it made me look at the rest of the world. Where are we standing in regards to the rest of the world with money, and what is our responsibility to God with that? And then I suppose that what Dave and I have always done is we've always said, let's stop looking up at what we don't have and let's look down at what we do have. So changing our perspective of where we stand, because often we're always, I mean, we're pumped with what we need. We need this best thing, that best thing, the newest car. And I think the challenge is to say, actually, the rest of the world look like this. We're doing pretty darn good if we can provide food on our tables, have shelter and that sort of thing. And then reading The Rich Christians in Age of Hunger, like Justin was saying, like, you know, in New Zealand we're very different from somewhere in Italy or somewhere in America, you know, weighing up those sort of things. What is a reasonable amount to live, to spend on food and things like that? So look down instead of looking up. Yeah, I think we need to change our perspective.
Yeah, okay. So guys, I wonder if a person could look under the seat and you'll see one of these. And could I have Phil and the team up the front? So can you... can I say thank you to the panelists? Can we give them a... Yeah. Thanks, guys. Yeah, awesome. Yeah. For those who would like to give on a regular basis to this church, that you can do it in an automated way through bank account to church bank account, and you just simply tick the box and you give this to the office at the end of the service, and that's just out there to the right. We do look to that. We're not commanding you to, but we are inviting you into this revolution, which is a good one of giving. So if you would like to give regularly online, grab one of these cards, fill it out, and give it to the office. That's all good. Did you enjoy the panel? Yeah, it's a good idea, eh? Did you enjoy the morning tea halfway through the service? Oh, yeah, okay. Have you enjoyed me this morning? No. Phil, let's finish with some songs.